Okay, the undercard of White Povetkin 2. Let's start from the bottom up. And I can only talk about the fights I've actually seen thus far. I can't talk about fights I haven't seen. The first fight I saw was Eric Pfeiffer versus Nick Webb. That was actually shown on YouTube. That was part of their preview. Now, going into the fight, I'd seen a little bit of Eric Pfeiffer. I know he was supposed to fight Daniel Dubois a while back, but for some reason, the Dubois team decided against it. I know that Pfeiffer had a pretty extensive amateur background. He fought some very good fighters in the amateurs. As a pro, he was obviously unbeaten. And he impressed Dillon White enough in training camp for Dillon to actually sign him. Dillon has a co-managerial contract with him. So I realistically, on paper, thought that Eric Pfeiffer should win this fight and win it pretty decisively. Nick Webb has been knocked out by the likes of Dave Allen and Kamil Sokolovsky. Now, Kamil Sokolovsky is a journeyman. Is he a dangerous journeyman? Occasionally he is, yes. But nonetheless, if you're a guy the size of Nick Webb who was being touted the way that he was, you really should be getting victories over guys like certainly Sokolovsky, but probably Dave Allen as well. But he got chinned by both of them. So I really felt like Pfeiffer should win this fight. But Nick Webb was very fired up. You could see that from his ring entrance when he was in the ring prowling around. And when he came out in the first round, he really stamped his authority on the fight. He wasn't messing about at all. Nick Webb could always punch. We always knew this. He's a very big man. And he just would not be denied last night. He decided that he was going to go and take the fight to Pfeiffer. And Pfeiffer, as far as I'm aware, took this on pretty short notice. And that's no excuse or anything like that. But I do wonder whether he was as mentally up for it as Nick Webb was. But whatever the case may be, Nick Webb went out there, established his authority, was, you know, swinging away with big shots right from the offset, intimidated Pfeiffer, I think, buzzed him in the first round a couple times. And in the second round, it continued. He just forced his will upon him, managed to drop him, and managed to stop him. So congratulations, Nick Webb. The best I've ever seen him look. Truth be told, I've never seen Nick Webb look that good. Yeah, I know he was tattooing Dave Allen early on in their fight, but as I say, he eventually got chinned. Whereas this time, it wasn't him just boxing at long range the way he was against Allen and hitting him with combinations that way. No, he imposed himself upon Eric Pfeiffer. And I've seen him impose himself upon journeymen and all these kind of people in the past. But I'm talking about an opponent who had some credentials, who had some ability. Not that Pfeiffer was an extraordinary heavyweight, but he does have some pedigree there. This is not a guy who comes from the blue collar circuit or white collar circuit. It's not a guy who comes from white collar circuit. This is a guy who had an extensive amateur background and was unbeaten going in. So good win for Nick Webb. I was a bit surprised by that fight. Now, the next fight on the undercard, which I watched, was Fabio Wardley versus Eric Molina. Now, Eric Molina has always had ability. He's always had some skill. He always could punch a little bit. The issue with Molina is that he doesn't appear to have much heart. He doesn't appear to have much stomach for battle. And therefore, when things get hot and heavy, Molina tends to check out. But if you go back and watch his fights against even Chris Arreola, he was stopped in the first round against Arreola, but he hurt Arreola in that first round. And that's back when Arreola was a lot better than he is now. Also, Deontay Wilder, when he fought for the WBC World Heavyweight title, he rocked Wilder on occasion. He showed decent skills. He was moving his head, making Wilder miss, making him pay. So Molina's always had that in him, a decent level of ability. And Fabio Wardley found that out in this fight because Fabio Wardley was getting touched up by Eric Molina in there. Eric Molina is a cagey vet. Wardley was trying to walk him down behind his own jab. Molina was managing to land counter right hands over the top of Wardley's low left hand. Also some body shots I seem to remember. As the fight progressed, it looked as though Wardley might find himself in some pretty deep water. And he was actually hurt by Molina in the fifth round. Molina pursued Wardley, who was backing up towards the ropes. They got into an exchange. Wardley got the better of it. Their legs did get tangled up, but it doesn't take much for Eric Molina to want to find a comfy spot on the canvas. Their legs did get tangled up after he took a couple shots and he went down. He seemed happy. He seemed comfortable on that canvas, and it was ruled a knockout for Fabio Wardley. So, yeah, it was a good fight for Wardley, I think. A good learning fight. Because going in there and just blasting somebody out in one round and not having to face any adversity isn't going to help him improve from a technical perspective and even from a boxing IQ perspective. So he'll be able to go back and look at that fight and say, okay, what did I do wrong? And it's not even just looking back at the fight on video, but even when you're in there, you remember certain things. You remember when an opponent does certain things, when he pulls certain moves, when he tries to lure you into certain traps. The next time you're in the ring and somebody tries to do something similar, you get a flashback. You think, okay, I've seen this before. I've seen somebody try to put me in this position before. I know what to do this time. And I know what not to do as well. So yeah, it was a good learning fight for Fabio Wardley. He did his thing. Some people are talking about his chin, saying it might be suspect. I'd be more concerned about Wardley's defense and about his boxing IQ. Because as I say, Molina always could punch. He rocked Deontay Wilder. He knocked out Thomas Adamek badly a few years ago. That was a devastating knockout. So Molina can't punch. These are big guys. He came in at 251 pounds. So I wouldn't necessarily see that as a massive problem for Wardley as yet. You know, we'll see how he reacts in future when he gets tagged on the chin again. So next fight I watched on the undercard was Chris Congo versus Michael McKinson. I didn't see the whole fight. I only saw bits and pieces. But from what I saw, McKinson was the ring general. He was dictating the pace. Chris Congo, to me, looked uncomfortable. He was moving around the ring, wasn't really landing anything particularly clean from the rounds I saw. So I can't really score it. I can't really tell you whether the decision was a fair one. I haven't heard anybody complain about it, but I'm just saying because I haven't seen the whole fight, I can't really give you my take on the scoring. But the end result was a unanimous decision win for McKinson, who was very happy and very hyper in the post-fight interview. It was quite funny, actually. He was very happy because he's come from obscurity compared to Chris Congo. And if we look at his record for a second, only 2 KOs in 20 fights. And surely Chris Congo must have looked at that and thought, there's no way that I can lose to a guy who's only had 2 KOs in 20 fights. He's not going to have the power to be able to deter me from doing what I want to do. But evidently he did. You know, knockout ratios can be deceptive. It's rare. Let's be real. It's rare for a guy with only 2 knockouts in 20 fights to be able to have the ability to keep you honest. That's rare. Normally you can just walk down guys like that with impunity, without too much concern about what's coming back. But in this case, no, Michael McKinson looks better than advertised. So congratulations to him on beating Chris Congo and taking Chris Congo's unbeaten record. Then we moved up to the chief support, which was Ted Cheeseman versus James Metcalf. Now, I never realized that James Metcalf was the son of Shay Neary, because I watched Shay Neary back in the days, and he was a very tough man. Metcalf doesn't look like his dad, Shay Neary, that much in the face, but his build is very similar. He's got this very square shoulders and this powerful build, which was similar to his dad. Now, Cheeseman, for me, showed that he was the more skilled and the better boxer of the two throughout the contest. But there was a round in the middle of the fight where Cheeseman kind of emptied the gas tank because he had Metcalf hurt, but he didn't manage to finish him. And basically, he punched himself out in that round. That's how it appeared to me. And he had to take a few rounds off after that where James Metcalf was able to come back into it. And in fact, he managed to rock Ted Cheeseman on occasion. So it was a good fight through, I want to say, 7, 8, 9, those kind of rounds. It started to get a little bit repetitive at times because it was a little bit one-paced. When Ted Cheeseman finally got his second wind, that's when the fight really started to turn and it started to look as though Ted Cheeseman was just going to go on to a points victory because it was pretty nip and tuck through the first, I want to say, maybe 8, 9 rounds, but well, maybe 7, 8 rounds. But then Cheeseman started to come back into it. He found his second wind. And then in the 11th round, there was a spectacular knockout where Cheeseman again appeared to be buzzed. Metcalf went for him. They got into an exchange. Cheeseman got the better of the exchange, and Metcalf was knocked out with a brutal left hand. And I hope Metcalf is okay. That's my initial reaction to that knockout was, I hope Metcalf is okay, because those kind of fights where it's an attritional battle and it's a long, grueling fight and it ends in a devastating knockout, those are the kind of fights where people can get hurt, like badly hurt. So I was a bit concerned, and I was happy to see that after they gave him, I think they gave him oxygen and they stood him up, he seemed to be in a decent way, you know, as decent as you can be after getting knocked out like that after a tough fight. But, you know, there's no serious injuries there or anything like that, which was good to see. So, yeah, Ted Cheeseman, congratulations to him. This was for the British light middleweight or super welterweight title. And Cheeseman is very rarely in a bad fight. I think he's maybe had one or two fights that were not particularly entertaining, but this fight was very entertaining. A back and forth slugfest until finally Cheeseman concluded matters in the 11th round with a highlight reel knockout. And also as well, another thing I forgot to mention is Cheeseman was cut in the fight. In the mid rounds, he got cut over his eye and he also had a bloody nose. And I'm wondering whether that disturbed Cheeseman a little bit, knocked him off his game a little bit, because again, he did take his foot off the pedal after, you know, rocking Metcalf in the middle. I think it might have been one of the earlier rounds in the fight, but he did seem to take his foot off the pedal. So it could be that he punched himself out, but it could also be that maybe the cut was affecting him a little bit as well. But yeah, anyway, let me know what you guys felt about the undercard here, the performances of all the fighters mentioned, where they go from here, especially somebody like Chris Congo. Where does he go from here after suffering that loss? Eric Pfeiffer, you know, he's only just signed with Dillian Whyte and he's lost already. Ted Cheeseman, you know, Cheeseman is a very tough man. I'm not sure how far he can go. I don't know whether he'll need to change his training setup or what he'll need to do, because has he reached his ceiling already? That's the question I want to ask you guys. At this stage, if Ted Cheeseman's to go on and challenge for world honors, he's going to need to be absolutely immaculate in terms of his technique, in terms of his strategy and so on, because he's just not as talented as the top guys at 154 pounds. And if you're not as talented as they are, then you're going to need to be immaculate technically, you know? So let's see what he can do. He's certainly got the toughness. He's got the determination. He's got the will to win. But just needs the skills, the ability, he's got a decent boxing brain, but you know, he needs to take that to the next level. Let's see whether he can do it. Yeah, let me know what you guys think in the comments. I don't think Povetkin managed to land a single punch. Certainly not a single punch of any consequence, but yeah, just thinking off the top of my head, I can't remember Povetkin actually landing anything. And obviously that's credit to Dillian Whyte, but at the same time, I have to say that Povetkin, as Dillian Whyte said he would, was diminished even from the first fight. Dillian Whyte, for his part, boxed an assertive fight. At times, he was very aggressive. He kept it long for the most part. He kept Povetkin on the end of a jab. He was landing body shots here and there. He wanted to be the ring general from the very first bell. And he had Povetkin looking flustered. He had Povetkin looking unsteady on his legs long before the fourth round, actually. You know, in the first round, you could see that Dillian Whyte really wanted to hurt Povetkin. It's as if he wanted to knock Povetkin out with one punch the same way that he got knocked out. So there were certainly no issues with regards to Dillian Whyte being gun-shy. If anything, there might have been some issues with regards to him being angry. He was definitely angry in there, as far as I could see. He was angry with himself, angry with the previous result, and he wanted to right the wrong. And watching the fight, he was doing well, but I just felt like he was giving Povetkin opportunities that he didn't need to give him, with a lot of wild swings and stuff like that. Dillian said post-fight that he felt like he could have got Povetkin out of there in one round. Maybe he could. But again, you can come unstuck, as he did in the first fight, when you give your opponent opportunities that you don't need to give them. So it was a good performance. Took center ring. There was a few moments in maybe the third round where he moved around a little bit and got Povetkin to come at him. But for the most part, he just took center ring and he kept it at long range behind the jab and was hitting Povetkin as hard as he possibly could at every opportunity to try and shell shock him. And it worked. So it was, I think, the third round, because he kind of shook Povetkin up a little bit in the first. Then the second round went by, was a quiet round. Then I think he shook him up again a bit in the third round. Then in the fourth round, he managed to seriously hurt Povetkin. He was on unsteady legs. Dillian Whyte followed it up, managed to put him down against the ropes. And the referee, you know, Povetkin tried to get up. The referee waved it off. It was a good stoppage because Povetkin was done. I mean, the commentators, I was watching the DAZN stream, and I'll come onto that in just a minute. But on the DAZN stream, it was Nick Hawlin and Paul Smith. And Nick Hawlin was commenting about how Povetkin just didn't look right. And he is 41 years of age at the end of the day. And he did take a lot of punishment. Just like Dillian Whyte said, he did take a lot of punishment in the first fight. And maybe he was right. He actually needed more time to recover than Dillian did physically. Although mentally, it's a different thing. Now, when it comes to the mental side of things, again, Dillian Whyte certainly wasn't gun-shy. He certainly didn't appear to have any lack of confidence based upon what happened last time. We never got to find out about his punch resistance because, as I said at the start, he didn't get hit. So that's still another question that has yet to be answered. But in terms of the confidence and all that, no problem at all. So that is definitely a good sign that he can go straight back in against an opponent who knocked him out badly and not have any, you know, confidence issues. Look, it's not necessarily going to be the same case every time, because in the first fight against Povetkin, he was winning and Povetkin landed one shot out the blue against the run of play. If he's in a fight where maybe he's taking a beating and he isn't winning and he gets knocked out in those circumstances, would he be so confident going back in there in an immediate rematch? Maybe he would. As I mentioned before, during my decades watching boxing, I've seen that Jamaican fighters, and I'm talking about fighters that were born and raised in Jamaica. I believe Dillian Whyte came to the UK at maybe the age of 14, something like that. Might be a bit younger than that, but he's still got the accent, right? And he's still very Jamaican. And all the Jamaican fighters I've seen over the years, from Donovan Razor Ruddock to Trevor Burbick, many others, they tend to be extremely brave. They tend to be the kind of guys. Razor Ruddock was like this. He was one of them kind of guys where you could knock him down, you could knock him out, and he'd come back and try and fight you again the next day. That's the kind of mentality a lot of the Jamaican fighters have. And Dylan White's definitely got that mentality. He's old school like that. He's one of the typical Jamaican fighters in that sense that I've seen over the years. But yeah, good performance. And he was in much better shape here. I know Dylan White has been around 247 pounds in several fights in the past. Against AJ, he was 247. But in this fight, he was way more solid looking than he was against AJ all those years ago. And I don't know, I think he didn't look as muscular as he looked in the Chisora fights, but he looked more lean, if that makes sense, especially around the midsection. You could almost see abs coming through for Dylan White, and I haven't seen that since his very early fights. You know, first, second, third, fourth fight. Actually, I'm not sure about his first fight, but his early fights that were on IATV and stuff like that, that's when Dylan White was more cut up. But this is probably the best or the leanest I've seen him since then. So it's good to see him in that kind of condition. And hopefully he can keep his weight down. You know, if he can stay active and get out there, keep his weight down, it will definitely benefit and help him. So yeah, hats off to Dylan White. Good performance. Got his revenge. And of course, this helps a fighter moving forward. You know, I know Dylan White is a very naturally confident guy, and all the things I've just said about him with regards to not being gun shy, still having plenty of confidence, this will add even more to the confidence. Because there's one thing believing you can do something, it's something else to actually know it by going through with it. And now he knows that he could right a wrong that quickly. And it was a little reminiscent of Lennox Lewis and Haseem Rahman. Not to say the fight was on that kind of level, but what I mean by it is he had Harold the Shadow Knight in his corner, who was Lennox Lewis's assistant trainer. Lewis was knocked out in, I think it was 5 rounds by Rahman in the first fight. Then in the rematch, he knocked Rahman out in 4. And that's the same thing that happened here with Dylan White against Povetkin, right? He got knocked out in 5 by Povetkin in the first fight. Then in the immediate rematch, he knocked Povetkin out in 4. So he did it one better, just like Lennox Lewis did when he knocked out Haseem Rahman to regain the world heavyweight title. So yeah, great performance, onwards and upwards. Not a perfect performance by any means. There was, he seemed anxious to get the fight over at times, a bit too anxious, a bit too angry. And against a 41-year-old Povetkin, who by his own admission had taken a lot of punishment in the first fight, you can get away with that. But as he steps up against younger guys at the real elite level, he's not going to get away with some of those mistakes he was making in there. You know, the way he was really overcommitting with shots and falling in. Obviously, he wanted to take Povetkin's head off. But there are fighters out there who'll punish you for making those kind of mistakes. So, you know, he said he wants to get out in the summer and take on maybe a bit of a tune-up, you know, a stay busy fight. And those can be dangerous too. We've seen that happen over the years, right? With stay busy fights. But in the stay busy fight, I'd like to see him just have a nice, tidy performance. No wild stuff or anything like that. You know, nice, tidy boxing. Turn it on when he needs to turn it on, but just work on tweaking the technical things which he'll need to have in place when he fights an AJ, a Fury, a Wilder, an Andy Ruiz, and so on. So yeah, all in all, great performance. Now, what wasn't so great was the... well, first of all, let me talk about the fact that I watched the DAZN version of this fight, okay? Live streamed it. I didn't pay for it. Normally, I buy Sky Box Office pay-per-views. I didn't buy this one because of the Orwellian, neurotic, totally unnecessary entry requirements for people attending this fight. you know, I didn't agree with that at all. I thought it was, quite frankly, disgusting. They did have people, 500 crash test dummies, complete with Tampax on their face. it was what it was. And also, I'm glad I watched the DAZN version, because apparently on the Sky version, they were pumping out the propaganda like you would not believe. I'm glad I missed that bullet. Because, you know, Sky has just gone so, what's the word I'm looking for? Propaganda happy. Just pumping it out nonstop. The most egregious forms of propaganda. Every acronym you could think of, every SJW woke-ism that you could imagine, they're pumping it out nonstop, shoving it down your throat when you're trying to watch a boxing show. It's too much. It's bad enough Sky News and all that are doing that nonsense. To have it in the boxing as well is sickening. So if there's one hope that I've got for boxing in the UK in 2021, is that Eddie Hearn leaves Sky. I know the DAZN is not completely free of that kind of nonsense either, but it's not as bad as Sky. Sky is like, oh God, it's a woke fest. It's awful at this point. It's a SJW woke fest. Dear, oh dear, oh dear. We don't need that kind of nonsense. I don't need that kind of nonsense, right? That's all I can tell you. So, yeah, also another thing about the show, it was such a beautiful location in Gibraltar, but I guess it's because of the silly, neurotic restrictions they have out there. But to have a show in such a beautiful location and do it indoors was a kind of a disappointment. I expected it to be outside. There was like a big football pitch outside the arena. I thought maybe they could have had it there. But again, neurotic, nonsensical restrictions probably meant they had to have it indoors. It was what it was. Would have been great to see the backdrop, you know, the ring with the big rock in the background and all that kind of stuff would have been amazing. But still, what we really are tuning in for is the fight. And it was a dominant display by Dillon White. Really didn't get hit, you know, left Povetkin shell-shocked and did the business in four rounds. So hats off to him. He now is the WBC interim champion. And he has to just wait and see what happens with AJ and Fury and just wait for his opportunity. In the meantime, stay busy in summer and then hope to get the winner of, assuming they have two fights and assuming their fights even go ahead at all. Maybe their fights don't go ahead and Tyson Fury has to fight Dillon White before the end of the year. But if the fights do go ahead, then I guess he'll have to have a fight in the summer and then wait until early 2022 to get his shot. So anyway, let me know what you guys think about Dillon White's performance. Let me know.